everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and these are the stories that you need to know about today. Mike Johnson does an interview where he almost sounds insane. Meanwhile, a very sane U.S. conservative congressman says it is wrong to police thought, and how a dead puppy, yes, a dead puppy, has become the most important story in America. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. All right, so here we go. Congress has passed a law, 320-91, to forbid anti-Semitism in the United States. Let me be clear, really clear. I think anti-Semitism is deplorable. I also think racism is deplorable. I think hating Indians is deplorable. Hating Russians or Mexicans is deplorable. It's wrong. But when you pass a law telling me what I'm not allowed to like, aren't you also telling me what I have to like? Isn't that really the same thing? Passing a law that says you're not allowed to hate something? Think about that. Think about that for a minute as you listen to this guy right here. I'm going to play him for you. This is a guy, he's a Republican congressman. His name is Chip Roy. Conservative dude. Don't always agree with him. I do here. He also does not agree with his colleagues in Congress, the ones who just passed the anti-Semitism law.
Yet again today on the floor of the House of Representatives, we had another show vote to make people feel good about themselves by passing a bill that says anti-Semitism in the title. When we want to insert the government into what you're thinking and what motivates you, you are empowering that which should never be empowered. The ability of the government to police thought, to police speech, to police your views, not the views that carry out then the actions.
I gotta tell you, he is 150% correct. The idea that any government would pass a law telling you what you're allowed to think, that's like passing a law that says you're not allowed to be stupid, or you're not allowed to like the color blue or dislike the color red. That's crazy. Once you start going there, can you really call yourself a democracy? I mean, pardon me for getting worked up about this, but I mean, we're really treading on some dangerous turf right now. By the way, they didn't listen to him. They passed the measure, 320-91. It now goes to the Senate, and then it goes to the president. You can be guaranteed the Senate's going to pass it, and you know damn well sure that the president of the United States is going to pass this as well, since it's basically his rhetoric, everything he's been saying to try to get reelected. Let me bring my colleague Manila in here. When you hear Chip Roy say these, you can't police thought, isn't he right? What do you say?
Yeah, he's absolutely right, Rick. I mean, we talked about this the other day, right? That you cannot legislate out how somebody feels. You can't place laws to make anybody like or dislike, yeah, hate or love. You can't do that. But more importantly, we have a constitution here in the United States. I know they don't have that in much of Europe, like in the UK, but we have a constitution. The First Amendment right secures that for us to like and espouse what we like, and more importantly, espouse what we hate. And this is what Congress, or at least the lower chamber, is trying to impede on.
Last time I checked, it's called the First Amendment, and there's a reason it's first. It's not the Second Amendment. It's not the Third Amendment. Right. It's the very first thing that the people who founded the United States of America decided to put at the very front of the Constitution. They said, this is the most important thing. Congress shall pass no law, in fact, is what they wrote. By the way, believe it or not, we now have a Congress that's led by some guy named Mike Johnson who says just the opposite of what you and I are talking about. He's saying the only reason people are protesting and that we need to get rid of these people and arrest them is because they hate the Jewish faith. Let's listen.
This is not who we are as Americans. This is not an expression of the First Amendment. This is not an exchange of ideas. This is threats and intimidation of violence against Jewish students for who they are, for their faith. And that's a terrible trend that's going on in the country right now.
By the way, one of the reasons that is so ridiculous is They have found that there are as many Jewish students protesting as there are non-Jewish students in many of these protests. So to say that these people are only protesting because they like Jews doesn't make any sense if you consider that some of the protesters are Jews themselves. Point two, most of these people are protesting the foreign policy of a nation called Israel, which has nothing to do with people's religions. But before I go to you, Manila, I want you to hear this next one. Here's Mike Johnson now. He's asked, and by the way, yesterday, I think on this newscast, I was blasting CNN for some of the stupid things that they do and have done. Here, you know what? I'm giving them props. This is an interview he sat down and did with CNN, and they actually asked him some pretty tough questions. Here, Mike Johnson is asked why they should be, why these people who are protesting should be expelled or arrested if all they're chanting is free Palestine. Listen to his response.
The main thing they were chanting was free Palestine. How is that anti-Semitic?
Well, what's anti-Semitic is that Hamas endorsed this protest today. Within the last 2 hours, they issued an endorsement statement and heralded the students here and said, this is the next generation of leadership in America. If you're getting endorsed by Hamas, that's not a good look. It's not a good sign. Some of these students apparently are unaware of the atrocities of October 7th, or they're denying it. They deny that women and children were brutally raped and murdered, that infants were placed into ovens and cooked alive.
Manila, to you.
Rick, I mean, his statement there was peppered with falsehoods, like the whole beheaded babies, the babies cooked in ovens, you know, like some Grimm's fairy tales, right? Like this is exactly what Mike Johnson is espousing, and this is the Speaker of the House. Again, this, to your point, you said
dangerous.
It correctly. A huge number of the people protesting and saying free Palestine, first of all, it is their First Amendment right to say whatever the hell it is that they want to say, number one. Number two, a lot of them are Jewish people themselves that side of the argument.
And even
so
if they're
Mike
wrong,
Johnson,
and even if they're wrong,
grasping at straws.
In America, you can be wrong. You can like Trump. You can think Trump's an idiot. You can like Biden. You can think Biden is an idiot. That's what we're, when we start passing laws saying, no, you got to like this guy. You got to hate that guy. Oh my goodness, are we in trouble? What?
Mike Johnson is on the ropes, and the only people saving his hide are the Democrats. And as we know, the Democrats are very much so backed by AIPAC and the ADL and other groups that are very, very pro-Zionist. So, you know, if you got to make sure that you keep your gavel, then you better make those people happy. And what's happening is the Democrat Party are the ones that have said so. They are saving him from getting expelled from being House Speaker.
Let me get to see these others, and then we'll get to the next comment. But Johnson is asked about the 30 to 40,000 dead Palestinians, including the 15,000 or so children, and the journalists and the aid workers that have been killed, to which he responds,
there have been civilians murdered, but that is not the fault of Israel. It's the fault of the terrorists, the Hamas operators and soldiers, the terrorists who have used these people and put them into harm's way. Israel, I'm convinced, is doing its very best to prevent civilian casualties, but this is a war, and they're fighting for their very existence, and they are not the aggressors. It is the other side. Some of the people here seem not to understand that, and I think that's a real problem. We can debate the merits of all these things, but what they're doing here is intimidating Jewish students. That's the thing that is so problematic.
So it's the Palestinians who basically deserve to be killed, and everything they're doing is because they want to be killed. This is amazing. Let's go to the next one. When Johnson is told not a single Jewish person has been physically harmed, injured, or attacked during the disturbances in Colombia, he says it's not about them physically being attacked. It's about their emotional well-being. Here it is.
You have to speak to these Jewish students who are in fear of their lives, who are cowering in their apartments right now, who are not coming to class. In fact, the administration recognized the threat was so great, they canceled classes. Now they've come out with this hybrid idea. Well, if you're Jewish, maybe you do want to stay at home. Maybe it'd be better off for you. It is so discriminatory. It's so wrong in every way. The responsibility of a university administrator is to keep peace on campus and ensure the safety of students. Job number one. If they're incapable of doing that, then you need different leadership.
I think we need to go back and talk to our forefathers and ask them why they inconvenienced those poor British people when they had those protests and they demonstrated when we started this country, and why the civil rights movement caused disturbances that stopped people from being able to drive in traffic and things like that. This is crazy talk. I don't even think we need to say anything else about this. Anybody listening to this who's read the Constitution of the United States can't help but look at this man and say, what in the hell are you talking about? I want to show you something else now, though, something that's going to kind of blow you away. For those of you watching us from overseas and don't know, the guy you're about to see, he's a very famous radio person. He's a personality. He used to make his living attacking politicians, celebrities, me included, by the way. Everyone's attacked me. For everything under the sun. Well, this guy... he just did an interview with the president of the United States. And you know what? I think he's in love. Let's listen.
Thank you for doing this today. I want to thank you for your compassion. You know, the reason I'm so excited to talk to you was because I wanted to understand the tragedy in your life and how you dealt with it. And you're the kind of leader I love, because we're lucky to have you in the Oval Office and serving as the father of the country. Because if you're a good father to your family, which you are, I know you'd be a good father to the country. And I want to thank you for providing a calming influence.
Manila?
Rick! Rick, is that the same Howard Stern or a clone? Or who was that guy? That guy was giving a tongue bath to the most powerful man on earth, who has the purse strings of the planet at his disposal, the ability to stop 34,000 plus Palestinians from dying, the ability to stop 600,000 other Ukrainians from dying.
Yes.
And he's the most compassionate. Give me a break. Howard Stern has lost his
Gandhi.
Marbles.
He's Mother Teresa. He's FDR. He's Abraham Lincoln. He's, I don't know, JFK. Name your... I don't know what to say other than I cannot believe we just watched Howard Stern do that with the guy who's the president of the United States right now. There's something else happening right now in America that you need to know about. It has to do with a certain governor who happens to be a Republican, of course, who wrote a book where she said that when she was in her farm growing up and she was much younger, she shot a dog because it was out of control. You would think that after she wrote that in the book, the reaction of the media is basically taking it as she admitted to killing her mother, her father, her children, and then 100 other people who lived in her neighborhood. Watch what they're doing with this story.
It's horrible enough to kill a dog, but even crazier to brag about it. That's a level of psycho I didn't even know existed.
In her new book, Noam admitted to killing her dog. Now, I know that sounds terrible. Look, I know it sounds terrible, but it's much worse. I can only imagine Christy Noam with the dog trainer. So, Governor, we've evaluated Cricket, and we think we should kill her.
She also managed to unite the right and the left. Because America, if nothing else, we are dog lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And don't tell me you shot a pup because it wasn't used to hunting. You know, maybe you're not a good teacher.
You know what's funny, as I watch these people, all of them in their air-conditioned studios in New York, not a single one of them has ever been to a farm, grown up in a farm, grown up in a rural area, or knows anything about where their hamburgers actually come from. I'm not for killing any kind of animal, but the fact that they've spent an entire week talking about this while not talking about what's going on in Ukraine, not talking about what's going on in Gaza, just tends to make me a little bit on the crazy side, as in loco, as my mom and dad would say.
Look, I'm not saying I love Christy Noam, but it was a different era. And if you remember the movie Old Yeller, Rick, I mean, sometimes you got to do difficult things like that if you're out in a rural place in a farm with your animals that, you know, may pose a threat.
And it's worth a story.
It's not like Christy Noam is Lizzie Borden.
Exactly. It's worth a story. It's interesting. And it may say something about her character. But Manila, as you well know, because you monitor this stuff for a living, we've spent a week now of people doing this story over and over and over again. Every newspaper, every newscast. I mean, really? Really?
Distraction, Rick. Distraction. Distraction from the real difficult stuff. from the things that really do need to be discussed here in the United States. Mainstream media here in the U.S., you know, is in a deplorable position, which is obviously why you and I are not in it, because we can't stomach doing stuff like that, talking about this day in and day out.
And maybe why we have millions more viewers than they do right now, because it's getting to the point where, last I checked, people watching CNN, there may be 150,000 people watching in their demographic that they care about. And that's out of 350 million people who live in this country. Manila, always a pleasure. Let's talk again soon, okay? When we come back, we're going to talk to somebody who is there on the ground. This guy's, this is courageous, let me tell you. He's covering what's actually happening in Gaza at the camps where Palestinians are trying to survive. His name is Tarek Hajjaj, and he's going to join us next. Don't go away.
Counter the Russian state control narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays, on est en France quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
За военных, которые погибают, но они достойны защищать нашу родину.
По нам начали стрелять украинские. Мне ногу ранили. Вот так вот аж. Да чуть-чуть остался шрам.
Фашисты первыми наступали на нашу землю. А мы защищали ее, терпели, погибали. Но они все равно идут прямо до победы.
This is Direct Impact. Tarek Hajjaj is a Gaza correspondent for Mondo Weiss. They specialize on matters related to the Middle East and U.S. Foreign policy. This is what he just wrote, by the way, in case you want to look for it. The title is, Palestinians in Gaza's displacement camps face rampant disease due to destroyed infrastructure. He writes about these thousands of people whose homes have been leveled, and now they're living in camps. Which is really, I mean, if you look at the picture, look at that, look at that. It's like nothing more than cloth spread out over the ground, scattered among raw sewage, where children are forced to play in that urine and that crap. This is where they play. This is where they live. It's just horrible. Tarek joins us now. He is live from Egypt. Tarek, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
How would you describe the living conditions in these camps that you visited? Tell us about them. Tell us about these people.
Well, there's no life there. You can't see, you can't say that there's some kind of life here for people to endure the harsh circumstances and conditions that Israeli army is forcing them to live. Tents are just next to each other. Everyone, every family got a tent. That family which got a tent in these camps consider themselves as lucky family because they have some place to cover them. They are not on the street. They are not out there for nothing to live or nowhere to go.
What do they eat? What do they eat? How do they get through the day? Where do they go to the bathroom? How many are there? Paint me the picture. I mean, pictures that you are in your article look like misery. First of all, those don't look like tents to me. Looks like somebody found a sheet and threw it over themselves.
Yeah, we can't say there is a bathroom, or we can't say there is a kitchen inside the tent. So they just dig a hole inside their tent, a hole in the earth, and they use it as a bathroom. This is for the bathroom. For food, they can light a fire. They can go to any tree, cut off some of its branches, and get him home, as their home is a tent now, trying to flame this branches and this wood. And they cook whatever they have from food, from aid or the markets, if they have money to go to the market and get something, because even prices are extremely expensive in Gaza. If you can't find vegetables or fruit, it's hard to get. It's hard to have money, to have anything to survive.
Are they all there because their homes have been destroyed? And if so, how many of them? What percentage of the population in that area right there, I think you're close to Rafah, have had to leave their homes? And how many are bunching into this area that you're reporting from?
Well, according to the UN statistics, they say like there are almost 400,000 families in this area, in Al-Mawasi area, which is west of the Rafah city. And it is full. Now, there's no new space for any new family. It seeks like shelter or they want to evacuate for this area specifically. And recently, when the Israeli army warned people of Rafah to evacuate their homes too, the army ordered the people of Rafah to go to Al-Mawasi too, the same area. So families in Rafah went to this area and found that they don't have a space to have a tent there, or they even don't have any place to go. So that specific area looks like a huge hole with all people crowded in the same place. They're eating the same food. They're using the same tools to survive. And if you go to walk there only once, you will get your heart broken from the scenes you will see, from the children who will beg you to give them anything to eat, will beg you to help them. Anyone in this place just needs anyone to help him.
We hear that there are people starving, literally starving, that you can actually see people who are dying of malnourishment. Is that true? Can you confirm that?
I reported some stories for Mondwise about a guy, a child, who just starved to death. And I always posted some photos for people. I care a lot about kids in my reporting, and I always interested in their stories. So wow. I reported like hundreds of kids inside Gaza who's starving, and their family just make appeals to anyone who can help feeding them, who can help evacuating them from Gaza to a safe place like Egypt.
That's amazing, especially considering the last story I did where in America, the journalists are spending days talking about a dead puppy when we have children dying in Gaza from starvation. It's sad.
By the way,
it's sad and it's wrong.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that. But I have also to tell you something. Every hour, according to the United Nations, every hour there are like 12 kids are dying in Gaza since the beginning of this war.
Good God. Let me ask you about you. I have heard reports that the IDF is targeting journalists. We've heard reports, by the way, they've targeted doctors and nurses, that doctors are actually changing their clothes because they don't want people to know that they're doctors when they leave the hospital areas, whatever hospitals are left. We know Al Jazeera was recently kicked out. Did you feel safe being there, covering this story? And did you feel safe, even if you weren't a journalist, just as somebody going into an area that's constantly being bombed and shelled? What was that like?
It looks like you live a life expecting you to be killed in every second. If you are at home or going to the street to report or going to these camps to find stories and find people to speak about them, the drones, the bombing, the shelling of the area around you never stopped. Never stopped. Everything. My life is going to me were going to kill them, this airstrike. It is not safe for me as a journalist. I used to work in Gaza without my shelter, without my vest, without my breast card or anything that indicates that I am a journalist. I was walking on the street fearing that maybe in any second the drone will just fire a missile at me because I'm a journalist. I'm speaking about people that Israel doesn't want the world to know their stories.
Before we run out of time, we have about a minute left, and I want to get your response to this. Israel is saying the reason they have to do this is because Hamas is there. They're killing Hamas members, and sometimes in an effort to kill a Hamas member, they accidentally kill a woman or a child, etc. Is that true?
Of course not, because in previous wars against Gaza in 2014, 2020, 2008, 2009, every war, Israel killed dozens of children, dozens of women. They don't care about who is going to get killed. They only care about their bombing and their destruction to the Gaza Strip.
Let me stop you before we run out of time. Does it seem to you they are doing it indiscriminately? In other words, they know they are killing people who are not members of Hamas, but they are doing it anyway. That's an important distinction.
Yes, of course. Of course, I can confirm this, because when they want to bomb an area without harming any civilian, they simply call the owner of the house, telling them that you have to evacuate and tell people around you. But when they want to destroy, have an airstrike in a place, they just hit it without warning anyone. So the more casualties just get killed, children, women, and everyone.
It takes a lot of courage to do what you do, sir. Tarek Hajjaj, we thank you, sir, for taking time to take us through this story and to take us through what you have learned. Before we go, I want to remind you of our mission, really. We just kind of want to de-silo the world, tell all truths, not just one specific truth. Truths, they don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. They're in Egypt, through the voice of Tarek Hajjaj, who you just heard from, and many other people on many different sides of many different stories. Until next time, I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact.